I'm talking to Aidan O'Neill. And Aidan, where am I? What's the name of this place?
Fartran, F-A-R-T-R-A-N, Fartran, Ballyconnell.
And have you lived here always?
Lived here always, yes.
So are you farming the same land that your father farmed?
My grandfather bought this farm. He went to Scotland and earned the price of it and came back and got married and had two boys, my father and an uncle of mine, which he lived here. And my mother and my father had eight children. And they were all in Ireland all their life. They lived in Ireland. There's three of us alive and there's five of us dead.
And so tell me, living here in this area, this place, and farming, did you find life was easy, or was it hard, or do you remember difficult times?
There was difficult times, a lot of the time. I lived during the war. I remember the day the war broke out in 1939, the 1st of September, the Second World War. My two sisters were in Belfast, and my mother couldn't get in touch with them to get them home. She thought the Germans would be bombing the shipyards.
Yeah.
So, seemingly, but that's what I remember of the First World War in the beginning. And I remember my father reading the paper. We got the daily paper, and he read the paper for an old man that couldn't neither read nor write. And that was a time we had to stay very, very quiet. And there was younger children than me, and you couldn't make any noise while the paper was being read. And they could discuss the whole war during that time, after he read the paper. And then he used to say that Italy won't fall to a foreign power. That was a great speak he had. And he was very much in favour of the Pope, and that kind of that he thought that wouldn't happen in Italy, that they'd be defeated on account of that. I know whether he was right or not, I don't know.
Yes.
So
what they did, and you grew up through that emergency.
And 1947 was a very bad year. Remember that was the year of the big snow, and then it rained the whole year, and the corn was very difficult to get it cut. And then you go on into the 50s, it was even worse. To start at the whole youth of this whole area went to England. And
why was there so much emigration out of here at that time?
There was no work, there was no nothing, absolutely nothing. So as you get a job on the farm, I worked with a farmer for 1.50 a week, £1.10.
Okay, and the farm here at home, was there a farm?
My father was alive at that time,
and yeah.
There was another brother lived worked here as well. He worked at home. So that was a tough time, and until it began to improve then in the 1960s, things began to get more up. Sean Lamass opened up after De Valera resigned in 1959. And he became president then, and Sean Lamass came in then, and he got all these businesses in from America, and there was more work then and more money around, and the times was better then, and on into the 70s. But the whole thing changed then as well.
Mm-hmm.
Society all changed. You know, there was people got cars instead of going on bicycles. That happened. That's the way it happened.
So people travelled more then.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like my sister was in Belfast, and we went down maybe three or four times a year to visit her. And
was she a nurse?
No. She worked in with a sister of my mother's in the old Park Road in Belfast. Had a shop, and she worked there. In Belfast that time, or in the north, you if you came from the south, you couldn't take up a job except you had a permit. And they wouldn't give you a permit when you were from here. I'll tell you one joke. About a Protestant chap that went down to Enniskillen to work. And he went to serve his time in a garage. So they wouldn't give him a permit. And he was given out about it. They wouldn't give him a permit, he says, and me a apprentice. That's the way he put it. Now, whether he was right, he didn't get his permit.
But what your sister then, on the other hand, working with your mother's sister?
She would do it because she wasn't a civil servant, or she wasn't capable of taking up a job. She left school at 14, so she wouldn't have been educated. So she was all right, like she wasn't going to do the money harm.
Okay, so she was allowed work and.
Oh yeah, she was allowed work. Yeah, but only on. You wouldn't get a higher position.
Yeah.
And
was it a grocery shop?
Grocery shop, yeah.
What part of Belfast?
The old Park Road.
And did they do okay?
They did. They did. Oh, yeah. This woman had. She was a widow woman.
Yeah.
Probably had a pension, but she had one daughter. And she worked with her for a year, and then she got married for several years. Then she got married to a man named Tommy McGreevy. He was an electrician. And they had four children, three boys and three girls and one boy. And then when the trouble started, he was going to secondary school at the time. And he'd come here for the 8 weeks of the holidays. So he wouldn't get into trouble or wouldn't get involved in anything. He was 16 about at the time.
This was your nephew?
My nephew. He's in Dublin now. He came to Dublin and... I'm slipping a wee bit. They left Belfast then, and I was telling you about if he went one side, he'd be beaten up by a Catholic gang. If he went the other side, he'd be beaten up by a Protestant gang. So they were afraid for his life. And they went. He got a job with in Limerick. It wasn't Semper, it was another. Remember, he was kidnapped.
Oh, yes.
John Tady.
John Tady.
Mm. He owned that place in Limerick. And then... he wasn't accepted in Limerick. He got in as a foreman.
That is the father?
Jim's father, he was Tommy McGreevy.
Yes.
He got in...
The family had moved down to Limerick. Because of
the trouble in
Belfast.
In Belfast, yeah.
I see.
And he often got caught up in riots or coming home from work. Or he worked in the shipyards as an electrician. And he often was coming home at 2 o'clock in the mornings if there was a job to be done and finished on the ships. And then he often was stopped and held for a while. Not very long, he was accepted as he was. So when he'd be often coming home, then there'd be troops would be running round, somebody shooting at them, and he was afraid of being caught in the crossfire.
And so when he got to Limerick then, did he find himself in trouble down there as well?
Not political trouble. He wasn't accepted. He was a North man. And he wasn't accepted in Limerick.
But he was Catholic.
He was, yes.
But just because he was spoke with
a Northern accent, yeah. And maybe he got promotion where someone else expected it. But he didn't stay there too long. And then he got a job in Dublin.
Yeah.
Something similar in another factory.
Semper,
then he got a job with him. He was there until he retired.
Imagine, yeah. And so you know, that came very close to home, didn't it?
It affected your
family like that. But when you were working here then, the Protestant neighbour that was... intimidated too. I mean,
with yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. What can you tell me that story again? I know you told me earlier.
Yeah.
Can you tell me again?
Well, he was a young man, and he went and he joined RUC.
And what was his name?
I don't know if I want to give you his name now.
Because I interviewed a few of them up in the north. I interviewed Jemison.
Hmm.
I interviewed Clark. I interviewed Byers.
I can give you his name, I suppose, but like I don't want to get involved.
No. It's just for the record. That's all.
His name was McGee.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he would be retired now. He would be.
Yeah. But what happened to him then?
I don't know. I know his brothers. I'm very familiar with them, and if I meet them, I have a good time for them, and they have good time for me. But I had nothing to do with anything what happened or anything. But he didn't come home.
How do you mean he didn't come home?
He didn't come home from Belfast to here. That the people knew. Maybe he came home at some stage and to meet his parents, or maybe his parents were down to meet him. I don't know. But
what years were... This was right through... He'd
have joined probably now in there, or you see, in the 60s when there was no trouble.
Yeah.
But then later on, he wouldn't have come home.
So again, fearful of his life.
Well, I'd say that was it. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
And was this the norm? I mean, did people accept this? You lived in just down the road.
Yeah.
Bonvoy. Yes. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me how difficult was it there during the Troubles?
I never really had very much difficulty.
There was no real...
not that I know of. I wouldn't have been going across the border very much, the same as Aidan would have.
Yeah.
You know, because I didn't have a car and...
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't have. I was an only child, so I didn't have brothers or sisters working someplace either. Yeah. You know, the connection that he had.
Yeah.
So I don't have any of that.
But because I know you have such a great... interest in history yourself, and you'd know, I mean, there was trouble from 1922 right up along. Do you know, your continuous difficulties. And so, and there was a lot of support here for Republican groups. Would you agree that, you know, that there were...
No. I was in the FCA. And we were intimidated. Not much, but to a degree.
By who now?
By the IRA.
And why?
Well, they didn't believe in the republic that we have. They wanted the North to be in a very difficult situation. And when they'd have the republic in the same position, this is what Gerry Adams said. We'd be in a very interesting situation.
What was the thinking behind that?
Yeah. And there was men came from Longford to meeting in Ballyconnell, FCA men. That very same night, some of the hunger strikers was after.
Oh, dying. Bobby Sands.
Some of them died. And the Republicans were all out in full force, and the top Ballyconnell was an IRA stronghold, which it wasn't. There's some in it, all right. But they thought they'd never get out of Ballyconnell. And by that time, when Bobby Sands died, they closed down Ballyconnell. The pubs was all closed, and we were playing basketball in the FCA hall, and they came in and asked us to stop playing. That on the night he was dead, he was buried at this stage, and asked us to stop playing. So we said we're finishing in 10 minutes anyway. And then we left. They didn't, but that went back to headquarters in Longford. And the officer in charge was very much annoyed that these fellows come in and tell us what to do. Soldiers of the state. They were subversives.
I were you angry yourself personally at what happened?
I ignored them. We ignored them. We did, if they said anything to us, we went in our uniform up the town on our bicycles and a rifle on our back. And someone might whistle at you or shout at you, but you wouldn't be seen.
And what year was this?
This had to be... The trouble started in what?
70, well, 69. You see,
this little thing went on. There was another rebellion in 59 and 60s, early 60s.
Yeah.
I remember that one as well. O'Hanlon was killed from Monaghan, was shot in the north. And Sean South, he was from Kerry, was he?
Kerry Owen, the song.
Yeah. So, they went through two rebellions. It was short-lived. And they got more sympathy then. And they got sympathy in the beginning of the next one. But they got... as the start of murdering people, as Jerry Adam calls it, doesn't call it murder, he calls it killing. And when they started doing that, they were getting not as much sympathy, but they were still getting some.
So joining the FCA, you were yourself in uniform, and
yep.
You saw yourself as a... A protector of the
of
peace
the state.
Of the state.
Yes.
And so, did you see the IRA then as the enemy, really, or did you see them as just terrorists? How did you see them?
I seen them as criminals, as well as terrorists.
And intimidators? Did you?
Yes, there would be that element in it, and. That it'd be that element in if they could get away with it, yeah. But they didn't. Not with the FCA. We were trained to ignore them.
But there was a time, Aidan, when the Irish Army did actually, you know, when the troubles broke out, the you know, there was a threat that the Irish Army were coming up here and they were manning the bordering counties.
Yes,
and at that time, were you there? You were, oh, I
was,
suppose.
Yes.
And did you, would you have attacked the North if you got orders to do so?
No, well, that never came across. We were protecting the state. And when the soldiers were up here, we weren't allowed out on patrol. Like we were volunteers.
Yeah.
And we went into the barrack in Longford or some of manning some of the fire stations, the power stations in Lanesborough for the relief of the soldiers.
Yeah.
That they wouldn't be doing too much duty because they wouldn't get enough time off on account of they were on 24 hours here in Ballyconnell, go back to Longford, take an hour to go back on a jeep and then get dismounted and all this. It'll take nearly half a day before they get to sleep after doing 24-hour duty. And then we were brought in on the weekends to relieve them of their duty. And we'd go in of a Saturday, we'd get 2 days' pay, but we'd be off on a Sunday. We'd go home on Sunday morning, but after sitting up for 24 hours, so you got 2 days' pay.
Yeah. And so you're... But did you see a genuine threat at the time that that there was going to be trouble during that? I suppose you could call it an emergency as well.
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
Do you know?
It was a kind of an emergency, but I don't think there was any. We didn't know about it, anyway. You know, we didn't think this is going to bust, or
yeah,
we didn't. No, we didn't. I didn't anyway.
How long were you a volunteer with the FCA?
Good to 40 years.
Were you? Oh my goodness! So you were a soldier,
yeah.
Really, all your life. Yeah.
Yeah,
uniforms here in the house guns and.
He won all army medals for shooting. So he won the All Ireland, I think.
We won the All Ireland twice with D Company, Ballyconnell FCA. There was three of us from the one parish and one from Templeport, next parish. Four of us fighting on the
Gusta. That's interesting.
And we won that twice in the Curragh against All Ireland, which had Cork and Galway. Galway had great teams. The 50th Battalion in Galway was an Irish-speaking battalion. And they were terrific soldiers. Tullamore had a great shooting team in Offaly. And they all belonged to the Western Command. And we fought or shot in the Western Command, and we won it year after year. And then we'd go on to the Curragh. But when the saw us coming, we started to get older than the young lads was. They were afraid to see us coming, and we were all as late, apparently. And we come with the guns thrown across our shoulders and casual, and go up and win, no trouble. And we'd have been in our 40s at that stage. So young lads at over 20, like, there's no hope against us because we weren't there. We didn't care whether we won or lost.
Oh, that's amazing. And were you a good shot yourself?
I was a sub a good few times, but I was twice we won, I was on the team.
Yeah.
But that doesn't say, I'm not saying that I won it, but it is a team effort.
Of course.
Yeah.
But that makes it even more interesting that I'm talking to you so, because you were, for the length of the Troubles, you were a soldier.
I was involved, yes.
And did you personally have any sympathy, or did I already asked you that, and you said you saw the terrorist as criminals? That's the word you used.
I used that word, yeah. Sometimes you might feel sorry for when the RUC shot somebody that was going to a football match. That would nettle you a bit, you know, and that did happen.
Well, I'm sure it would, because you were, as you say, an Irishman, and to have somebody like that.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, when just up the road from you in Swanling Bar, when you saw a bomb being exploding, because 8 bombs went off in that small village.
Mm.
I mean, did you think about that? And
oh yeah, that would annoy you, all right. Like, but as I say, it wasn't one sided. Like, you'd have a certain amount of sympathy. Like, that's the way it went down. That's the way an Irishman is. You know, all down the centuries there was rebellion, and that's what we learned at school.
But
and you were in sympathy with them.
Hmm.
But when you knew the lads that was at it.
And you must have.
Yeah. Yes.
And so when you knew them, how did...
You wouldn't have that much sympathy for them. And even they're involved in politics today. And you can see through what they're doing. They don't mind swearing lies.
What do you think they're doing?
I think they're trying to object to everything. You know, you take an example in the north. Like, there's no government in the north since last February. And now they wouldn't even vote for a Taoiseach here the last time. They didn't even vote. Now they want to get into government. Why do they want to get into government? So they'll end up with no government here and no government in the north. And it'll end up a very interesting situation, what Gerry Adams said 20 years ago.
Well, that's an interesting observation. And the fact that you were patrolling, if you like, because I mean, it's part of your brief, wasn't it?
No, we didn't do any patrols.
But as an, tell me what your brief was what would you do on an outing or a practice or?
Well, we do in camps and you do your training and you do tactics, what they call that is cross country tactics, and you'd be attacking some point. Just military training.
Yeah.
You'd be armed with, there wouldn't be live ammunition, but there would be blanks, and you could fire and all that. You could do that anyway.
So, were you high ranking in the?
I was a sergeant. I ended up as a quartermaster, CS, company sergeant.
And I can sense great pride, and you were obviously very proud of.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't be afraid to wear the uniform.
Yeah. And at the same time, you were farming as well, were you?
Oh yes. Oh, yeah.
And so you were mixing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It fascinates me how, okay, you had so it was a very complicated situation.
Oh yes.
And I'm trying to make sense of it. Really, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, like that's the way I see it.
That's the way you see it, is it? Yeah. So you think that Sinn Féin at the moment are manoeuvring, is that the right word to use, to create a situation?
Disruptive, I'd put it. Mm. Objective everything.
Hmm. You've strong views, haven't you, in relation to that?
I don't know.
Okay, can I ask you this question then? Do you see yourself as a victim of the violence over the last 30 years?
No. I don't think so. No. No, it was, no, I wouldn't be a victim.
An innocent victim.
My sister would have been a victim, and her family.
And has it? Is she still alive?
No, she's dead.
You told me that. Yeah. Yeah. Did you see a change in your sister? Did that live on in her, or did you see a difference in her?
I'll tell you a story. She worked when she came to Dublin when her family was done for. She went and she got a job in Thompson's Bakery in Talbot Street. Some fellow came in and he took a cake, and she stopped him. She wouldn't let him out with it. And he said to her, "Get out of me way, you northern bastard, you." And she says, "I was often called a Fenian bastard, but I was never called a northern bastard." She came to Dublin.
Imagine that. Yeah. So no matter where she travelled, she...
Well, she had a northern accent. Not a full northern, but she went to Belfast when she was 15.
Yes. It was just an extraordinary life for her, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
And her son now today, your nephew,
yeah.
Where is he now?
He's in Dublin now. He's 59 years of age. He has his own company. Mm. He does... handheld computer that the vets use for reading the tags on the cat.
Oh, I see. What's his name?
Jim McGreevy.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Extraordinary. You know, it's a great story. And I suppose...
Is it worth?
It's worth recording this. Of course it is. I mean, the it's talking to people like you. You build up a picture of life as it was and how it went on, you know, and it's good to record these and to talk about these stories.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and can you see yourself in the future maybe coming with your wife down to Ballyjames stuff or someplace where we can all meet and where
we were
greet one another.
We were in Dublin there last weekend before.
Yeah.
By first September. We're 50 years married.
Oh, fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We were in the Grand Hotel in Malahide for 2 nights.
Yeah. Oh, well,
Jim McGreevy was there. He was our daughter.
Oh, well, I must meet that man as well at some stage, yeah. But Aidan O'Neill, thank you for it's such short notice for asking or for allowing me to come into your house and talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.